Thrill Me.
This show is part of the Thrill Me Podcast Network. Experience more on Facebook and YouTube.
Let's get rocking!
It's time for the Metal Groove.
We're fighters for truth, justice, and the American way.
A podcast dedicated to music.
Party on, dude!
Extreme close up!
Here's your metal host.
Well, hello, Mr. Fancy Pants.
Tombstone Josh.
I'm your Huckleberry.
Do you hear that? What is going on? That rumbling, that strong thunder in the background, it can only mean one thing. Happy Metal Monday, everybody. Welcome into the Metal Groove Podcast. What is up? My name is Tombstone Josh. We are going to have an awesomely kick-ass show today, I think. So let's dive right into it, man. We're going to talk some news. We're going to play some songs. Then at the end of the show, I have a top 10 horror scores list that I want to share with you guys. I think the news segment's going to be hilarious. There is just some arguments popping off on Twitter between just two random people, all because of another random person, and then another random person swoops in, kind of saves the day a little bit there. All kinds of fun things I want to talk to you guys about. But let's kick the show off with what I think is probably my favorite news of the week, and that is Spooktacular Thrill Me Podcast is happening this weekend. I'm so super excited about it. My brothers over at the Thrill Me Podcast Network, we have a lot of cool stuff going on. Come on over to the YouTube page, Thrill Me Pod Net. Give us a like, give us a subscribe, follow, hang out, join us for all this fun that's going down. And each one of us is going to have a special show to talk about this weekend. It's going to be so much fun. I'm excited about it. There's going to be some giveaways. Come on over, check out the giveaways. We got some stuff going on, some happenings. It's spooky season. We're in full effect. We're large. We're in charge. We're kicking ass. I think it's going to be a good time, man. So Metal Groove Podcast, Review It Rob Show, Improper Guidance, The Mr. Wonderful Show, Haunters Podcast. We all have this hodgepodge of awesomeness just brewing. We have it in the cauldron. It's brewing right now. It's going to explode all over you guys' faces this coming weekend, man. So come on over. Give us some likes and subscribes. My particular thing this weekend is I'm going to be doing a top 10 songs with a little spooky twist on it. So make sure you guys keep your eyes and your ears peeled for that. I really think it's going to be a great time, man. I haven't looked forward to something so much in a long time. The page is growing. I'm so happy, so stoked to be doing this with my brothers. But yeah, it's going to be a good time, man. It's going to be a lot of good times. Speaking of good times, let's jump into a song right now by a man that I love featuring Bootsy Collins. Kind of get those Monster Mash vibes going. The spooky season. Let's play a spooky song. Good times. This is going to be Buckethead featuring Bootsy Collins with a song called Monster Mash. Turn it up. This is some good stuff, man. We'll be right back.
Ah, the name is Bootsy, baby. Bringing you the new slab, Monster Mash. Sponsored by Celebrity Slots. 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 Slots.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For monsters from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise, it is the Monster Man. It was a great monster, and it brought all the flies. It is the Monster Man. From the laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast, the fools all came from their humble abode.
Welcome back into the show. Man, I really dig that song. I love their take on that classic hit, Monster Mash. Always Buckethead solos in there. Such an awesome touch as well. All right, so let's do the fun stuff. Let's jump into the news right now. There's a lot of news I want to talk with you guys, specifically one article, like I said earlier. I think it's absolutely hilarious. But let's start off on kind of a bummer of an article I found. This one just came out today. Wolfgang Van Halen has once again weighed in on the proposed All-Star Van Halen tribute project, saying he got closure by performing his late father's songs at the recent Taylor Hawkins concerts. No progress has been reported on a possible Van Halen tribute concert since April, when former Metallica bassist revealed that he was approached by Van Halen drummer Alex Van Halen about 6 months earlier, playing bass for the project. The son of Andy Van Halen, who played on Van Halen songs On Fire, Hot for Teacher, and Panama at the tribute concerts, told Classic Rock magazine that he was no longer actively interested in pursuing the idea of a standalone Eddie Van Halen tribute event. I think I already did it with Taylor Hawkins tributes, he explained. I feel a lot of closure because my part of the show was a tribute to my father. When it comes to Van Halen and entities surrounding the band, it's unfortunate, certainly compared to Foo Fighters, who have their shit together with interpersonal relationships. I don't know what it is with some bands, but certain personalities just can't get over themselves to work collectively for one purpose. That's been the curse of Van Halen for its entire career. So my playing at the Taylor shows delivered that catharsis without the stresses of dealing with the Van Halen camp and players involved. Their camp is very dysfunctional. Hell, it was difficult to make plans even when the band was active. When asked about the Hagar's recent comments that he would love to play those songs again, Wolfgang said, "He did say that. He also said he wouldn't." Sammy said two different things. "No, I feel that I've said my piece, and if the Taylor concerts are all that happens, then I'm happy with that." So, it's a bummer if nothing happens with the Van Halen stuff, but it also makes sense too. I wasn't particularly excited about the lineup that they were going to throw out there. I don't believe that Joe Satriani is a phenomenal of a guitarist. I mean, nobody's as good as Eddie, but they have certainly way more picks out there than Joe Satriani. But I understand that's who has been playing with Sammy, so I guess that part made sense. But it is what it is. If something happens, that's cool. I think it should be like an all-together kind of thing, not just four members going out there and playing the songs. I feel like it should be an all-together thing with a bunch of different artists, kind of like they did with the Taylor tributes. All right, moving on. Right here, Monster Magnet is to release Test Patterns Volume 1 in November.
Monster Magnet was initially cosmos away from a major label alternative rock boom that would suck the band into the shiny MTV world of the mid-1990s. This was a band reveling in bad trips and the death of hippie dream, with the Manson family stare playing squealy lo-fi psychedelic music with the rabid punk rock snare like the Stooges. Long considered to be the true essence of the Magnet, early psychedelic voyages Tabs is finally returning to Earth's stratosphere with the release of Test Patterns Volume 1, available November 11th. Test Patterns Volume 1 features 2021 remix of Tab by Johnny McBain, alongside the original demo recorded in 1988, and then release of the aforementioned Forget About Life, I'm High on Dope. When Magnet started, John and I worked on record stores in Red Bank, and Dave worked in the comic book store, and we made a lot of tapes for each other. So that's cool, man. It's good to see that Monster Magnet's got some new stuff coming out. Test Patterns Volume 1 will be available in 2 12 vinyl editions, a deluxe gatefold sleeve with acid blotter inner sleeve, and a special Rogue Trig special deluxe edition. So cool, man. Good for them. Good for Monster Magnet kicking out some new music. I did see some awesome article here about some more new music coming out. Godsmack's Sully Erna confirms that next album will be their last one. I'm not sure a lot of people were asking for a bunch of new albums from Godsmack, but on we go with the article. Back in April, Godsmack frontman Sully Erna revealed that the band's upcoming album would potentially be their final one. Turns out it definitely is. In an interview with Pablo of 93X, the frontman said the new album is a recounting of his entire life and confirmed the record is the last record we're ever going to do. It's the most important album, I think, we've ever written and recorded. I've never been that artist who says, oh, this record is our newest record. It's our best work ever. You can read any interview you want over my whole career, and you've never heard me say that. I've always loved our records, always knew it would be one with good singles on it and hoped it would did well, but it was never the guy that said, this is our best work ever. I'm going to tell you right now, this is our best work ever. And it's because it's emotional, man. This is the last record we're ever going to do. This is the last run of the mill for us. We put every single ounce of energy and emotion into this album. Especially for me, when I wrote a lot of these songs, it was about my life journey. That's really what the sequence of this album becomes about. Not that it was planned that way, but this is really my kind of mystical thing happening where I felt the universe wrote this record for me. So if it is the last record to come by Godsmack, I'm not going to say I'll complain too much about it. But hey, it is what it is. Also, I seen that the Avenged Sevenfold, they have finished putting the finishing touches on their album as well. After literal years of talking about it and being continuously held up by the pandemic, Avenged Sevenfold has completed their long-awaited new album. Drummer Brooks Wackerman took to Instagram to make a post simply catching, "We're all done." Wallace has mixed every Avenged Sevenfold record since City of Evil in 2005, so it's very unsurprising the band used him once again. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Now on to the mastering stage. The new album features a 78-piece orchestra, which Wackerman noted in his previous photo post has helped make the new record is unlike anything we've ever released. Hell, this happened on Tuesday. We, Avenged Sevenfold, started writing this record 4 years ago, and I can't believe we are 90% done. One of the perks in the creative process is that we are able to track 78-piece orchestra on a record, said Wackerman. The fact that we are being able to bring incredible musicians together to enhance our art still gives me chills. I can't wait for the world to hear this. All I can say, it's unlike anything we've ever released. So awesome. Good news right there. I like Avenged Sevenfold. I know a lot of people don't. I'm in that camp that really enjoys their music. They definitely haven't been the same since the Rev passed away. But all power to them, man. Good for them. Good for them. This was a fun little bit of news that my brother shared to me here. So last month, or maybe the month before, we did a review of the movie Rockstar. It's based around a band called Steel Dragon, had Mark Wahlberg in it. Go check out that episode. It was a lot of fun. Anyway, Steelheart is releasing We All Die Young from the upcoming 30th anniversary of the album. With 30 years of hit songs and world-traveling tours under his belt, Steelheart frontman Milenko Majevicus has released a single, We All Die Young, as a part of Steelheart's 30th anniversary album that will be out at the end of 2022. So the tie-in there is that the song was in the movie Rockstar. And it goes on to say right here, Majedovic is a world-class vocalist who has performed as lead singer of the modern-day Doors and as the voice for the fictional rock band Steel Dragon from the film Rockstar, starring Mark Wahlberg, Jennifer Aniston. We All Die Young is the track from, is the track that Mark Wahlberg sung to and is a Steelheart fan favorite. It never got its proper due since the song's original version came out September 11th of 2001. And along with any other songs that had the word die in them, it was shelved promotional-wise after the terrorist attacks. So good for them. Hopefully they'll start getting their due. The new release of the new song sounds really, really good. I might play it on next week's show. If you guys are interested, let me know. But if not, man, I'm glad they're out there. I'm glad they're out there kicking some ass. Little bit of news here. Corey Taylor says that the split with Roadrunner Records, he has plans for the future. Let's face it, Roadrunner is not what it used to be. It's not even a shadow of what it used to be. Slipknot put out their debut self-titled album on Roadrunner in 1999 and will wrap up their career with the label this Friday with their latest record, The End So Far. Absolutely phenomenal album. If you haven't heard that one yet, go check it out. All right. I rushed through those articles to get to this one. And I'm going to start with the first article I saw because I thought it was weird. I was like, okay, I've never heard of this band before this. And if they're an awesome band, then, you know, give me all the crap for it for never hearing of these guys. But the article says, Falling in Reverse cancels festival appearance over missing laptops, with the quote of saying, it's like driving a car without an engine. I was like, okay. And my first, I didn't read the article because I didn't give a crap about this band. I didn't know who they were. So my first thought of the article was, okay, well, somebody stole their stuff to them. It's very important to them. So they're staying behind. They're going to miss these festival visits to take care of the matter at hand, which is finding their stuff. That's the way I took it at first. But oh no, this thing has blown out of proportion because some things have happened. Some people have said some things and we're going to dive into it. It's just an absolute hilarious thing. So apparently this band lost their laptops and they can't put on a show without their laptops, and the freaking music world went ablaze. There's people against them, people for them, people saying different things, coming to their, whatever. Okay, so here we go. I'm going to read some stuff, and then I'm going to give my take on the whole thing. But the beginning of this article says, Idiot Sebastian Bach and dummy Ronnie Radke exchange insults in Twitter feud over the use of backing tracks. Get ready, this is a fun ride. Sebastian Bach and Ronnie Radke have engaged in a war of words on Twitter after Falling in Reverse, again, another band I've never heard of before this, decision to cancel a festival appearance due to missing laptops. Just hours before Falling in Reverse was supposed to appear at the Wheel Rock Festival on Saturday, the singer and his bandmates scrapped their performance because their laptops, which the musicians used to run their show, were lost. At the time, Radke said in a video message that he and his bandmates had no other option because as a band in 2022, you need your laptops. It's like driving a car without an engine. This was my first problem. As soon as I saw that they canceled it because they didn't have their laptops, because they need them as part of their show, that's where I was like, holy crap. Are you telling me there's no other way that you couldn't have sacrificed or put something together for your fans to make this work? That was my first thoughts about it. Okay, let's keep moving on. A couple of days later, SiriusXM radio personality, a guy I'm not really a big fan of because he's kind of a dork and he kind of sticks his nose niche. But hey, you know what? I wouldn't be lying if I didn't say I would like to be in this fellow's position someday. But that guy's Eddie Trunk. I want to have an awesome podcast. He has a very popular podcast. Props to him. Whatever. He's been doing it forever. He goes on to say, okay, so he's been a vocal critic of rock bands using pre-recorded tracks at their live shows. He blasted Falling in Reverse for canceling the concert, writing on his own social media, this is astonishing. First I heard about this, I thought it was a joke to wind me up. How much longer are fans, promoters, media just going to accept the epidemic of live rock shows not really being live, paying your hard-earned money to see a band play live that's not truly live? And there are countless bands in 2022 that hone their craft and play live, tons, new and old, including the one that subbed for them in their slot, Jackal. No laptop needed there. This is just unreal, but at least I give them credit for being honest. Wow, I am closer than ever to launching my own band, and I can't sing or play a note. Simply amazing. Okay, so Eddie Trunk chimed in with his nonsense as usual. I kind of see where he's coming from, because I cannot believe these guys canceled a whole thing for this. I mean, get up there with an acoustic guitar or something, dude. Get up there and do something. All right, anyways, on October 1st, Radke took to his Twitter in response to Trunk writing, Eddie Trunk, so you want to talk hella shit? All right, he said hella. So that already tells you that this is a whole new generation of people. All right, you want to talk crap about laptops? Go and watch Kiss lip sync. Steven Tyler plays the piano, then halfway through the songs, he stands up on top of the piano while it's still playing, yet here we are acting like they don't use tracks, you idiot. You literal moron. He also shared a video of Trunk introducing Bach's solo band at a performance, and he included the following message: Eddie Trunk introducing Sebastian Bach using tracks. Both idiots talking crap about me using tracks. You can't make this stuff up. A short time later, Sebastian Bach chimed in because of course he did. You could not pay this man to keep his mouth shut. But he went on to say, Sebastian Bach went on to say, wow, you dummy. Are you trying to say that you believe that I use tracks on stage? Eddie Trunk, how freaking funny is this? Radke then responded, there's a fake audience chair in your intro tracks and also fake drums. The hell do you mean? That shit isn't real. You are using fake audience cheering as you walk out. Hints that you are using tracks. Things escalated further when Bach tweeted, watch what happens when track bands call real musicians idiots, prompting Radke to write, what are you going to do about it? You disrespect an entire generation of people after you use that synth laptops and backing tracks, all while using a fake audience on your track as you walk out. Screw you. Screw Eddie Trunk. Sebastian Bach later added, it's always so much fun to show someone in the world what it was like before the internet existed, so get ready. Virtual reality is so much fun until you have to deal with actual reality in your face. Can't wait to meet you in person. Name the time and the place, and I'll introduce you to rock and roll in person, man. Not backing down, Ronnie wrote. What a bummer. This man that we all once loved is literally disrespecting an entire generation of bands. You got a lot of people that grew up listening to you. You should be ashamed of yourself. All right. Okay, so let me... There's more to this, but I just want to give my take on this so far. So anybody that knows me knows I'm a giant fan of Steel Panther, okay? Steel Panther uses a backing track as an enhancement to what they're playing. I've seen Satchel play the notes in person right in my face. He is not faking anything. These are not fake musicians. This doesn't make them any less of a musician or a fake performer because they're using backing tracks. Sometimes you need a keyboardist. You're not going to pay a keyboard player to come on tour with you. Sometimes songs need different things. Sometimes songs need different aspects added to it just for the act. You know what I mean? So I already dislike Eddie Trunk for just thinking that any person that uses backing tracks is just a fake band. But when this guy comes with the receipts saying that, look, Aerosmith does it. Look, Queen does it. Look, Kiss does it. But Eddie Trunk supports all of them. It's just very, very hypocritical. Anyways, I'm on the side of it's okay to use backing tracks as an enhancement as long as you're not up there pantomiming the whole thing, not lip syncing the whole thing. Who gives a shit? People want to see that band. They want to go see them. They're a fan. They're going to pay their hard-earned money to go see this band. Let them enjoy what they're enjoying. It does not matter what Eddie Trunk thinks if it's real or not. It does not matter. Okay, with that being said, don't cancel a whole goddamn concert because you don't have your laptops. Figure it out, dude. You have fans to impress. Get up there. Do something to appease your fans. Just because a laptop is missing does not mean everything needs to be put on halt. I mean, you're a freaking musician. You're an artist. Figure it out. Okay, moving on. Earlier today, the Twitter feud continued with Radke sharing a classic video of Queen performing Bohemian Rhapsody and writing, hey, Eddie Trunk, hey, Sebastian Bach, and any other literal clown. I guess Queen isn't real rock since in 1986 they used full tracks to play Bohemian Rhapsody and walked off the stage. Within minutes, Sebastian responded, laptops weren't invented in 1986, though. You realize that laptops didn't come around till like 1997, right? So then how did Queen get on the stage if laptops were not invented? Don't they have to cancel the show? How did this clip happen without laptops, if that's even possible? So this is becoming a back and forth bickering between these two of what's okay and what's not okay. I've heard Sebastian Bach using the backing tracks. I mean, he got in the same kind of feud with Chris Jericho not too long ago because it just keeps popping up, man. It doesn't just keep popping up for no reason. But anyway, Sebastian Bach is a legend. Sometimes he just needs to calm down, keep to himself, leave things alone, and move on, dude. One person who seemingly defended Radke and Falling in Reverse is Motley Crue's Nikki Sixx, the bassist wrote, keep beating that fake bullshit drum. Sounds so get off my lawn. God forbid if some artists use technology as a creative tool on albums and in live settings. I get it. Just open your mind and stop fighting reality. Makes you sound so out of touch and like you're just wanting to fly the rock flag high. Okay, so once this is probably, I mean, I love some Motley Crue songs, I love stuff. Nikki Sixx has me blocked on Twitter, so I didn't get to see what he responded until somebody put in this article. But But I agree with him 100% here. It does not make anything fake just because they're using the backing tracks. Just come on, man. You have got to do something better than canceling a whole show over it. All right, anyways, that's my two cents around it. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be hilarious to see where this feud goes. But yeah, I believe I'm on the side of this falling in reverse and Sebastian or Nikki Six when it comes to this. It's like, just because it's not your thing does not mean that you have to blast it and put them down. It does suck that they canceled a whole thing for it. But, I mean, come on, man. This is the age that we're living in. People do use backing tracks. Sometimes they need to use backing tracks. As an example, I'll just go ahead and say one of my favorite bands of all time, Guns N' Roses, just did a show about them not too long ago. They're going to come up all the time. He's not the best that he used to be. He might need a little help. You know what I'm saying? They might need to incorporate some backing tracks. But, whatever. That's just my thoughts on the whole take. It's going to be funny to see where it goes from here. And the next bit of news that does pop up to begin with this, I will be sharing it with you guys because I think this is a hilarious story that will be fun to keep up with. But that is the news segment for this week. We're about to take a break. I guess my brother, Mr. Review It Rob, he's on the side of Sebastian Bach and Eddie Trunk. I don't know why he would be. He didn't incorporate that part. But yeah. So that I gave my take on it. I'm on the Nikki Six Falling in Reverse or whatever the hell the name of that band is. I'm on their side. Just don't cancel a whole show, bro. I get it. I understand what you're trying to do. A lot of songs and stuff that bands are trying to do now to make that live show more fun by incorporating different things. I understand it. I understand that's what you're doing. Just don't cancel a whole show, man. But anyways, we're going to move on to a song right now by a band that I believe uses some elements of theatrics and a lot of things going on in their live show, which they probably have some help with some sort of backing tracks. And that band is Ice Nine Kills. This is a song that was suggested by Mr. Review It Rob and Mr. Zachary Hilton. Ice Nine Kills is a song called Hip to Be Scared. I hope you guys enjoy it. It's a good time. We'll be right back. I'm going to do top 10 horror scores. Stick around.
Sections, a killer complexion is often a great alibi. Valentino could sore mix with violence and gore.
Well, I guess I'm a pretty sick guy.
With my beauty routines and a face full of spleen.
Some might say it's extreme,
but it's time to say goodbye.
Just leaving.
But why?
I have to return some videotapes.
You'll find no escape once you're captured on tape. I'm aware it's a bit avant-garde.
Space,
you piece of shit! Casually creeping without ever grieving. But wait, let me give you my card. That's all! There is no real me, just this dark entity that cannot be redeemed. So it's hard to say goodbye. So to hell with good intentions. So to hell.
Was a little bit too seen for me, but when the silver screen came out, I think they really came into their own, commercially and artistically. The whole album has a refined melodic sensibility that really makes it a cut above the rest. Hey, Paul!
This time.
Champions plot right out of a Hollywood horror movie.
Channel 9 that a mountain of evidence was recovered.
Out of the crime scene was a silence mask and an ice bag featured in
this confession.
Welcome to Password Horror.
Welcome back into the show, everybody. What I thought I would do to end this week's show is I would share with you guys an article I found detailing the top 10 horror movie scores. Now, everybody knows that when it comes to great horror movies and great soundtracks, an effective horror soundtrack just heightens the terror and the scene just so much. It kind of, it's almost scary as in itself. It's adding to the suspense that's in the movie. You know, it's October. It's spooky season. People like having these songs just going on in the background, just like setting that environment, setting that mood. Hell, some people like to set that mood all year long, and there ain't nothing wrong with that. But I thought I would share with you guys some of these soundtracks as far as scores go. We're going to be talking about songs this coming Friday. Like I was talking to you guys earlier, we have a big spooktacular happening over at the Thrill Me Podcast Network, and I'm going to be giving my top 10 rock songs that I heard and I love in horror movies. But right now we're talking about just scores. These are the kind of songs that don't overshadow the film, but they almost become inseparable from their from your favorite horror scene. You can hear some of these things going on in the background. And we're going to kick things off at number 10 with The Omen. The Omen soundtrack is just a blockbuster as in itself. Perfectly supplementing the gothic terror of The Omen, Goldsmith's soundtrack is filled with bombastic choral arrangements that overwhelmed the viewer with religious dread. The opening song, Avante Santini, I'll let you guess what that means, is a tune for the fit for a king of the underworld himself. Man, that is just awesome right there. Coming in at number 9, we got Annihilation, 2018 movie. The soundtrack, like the film itself, defines boundaries. It's alternating discordant humming blasted out synths, idyllic folk guitar, ambient noise, and the ungodly mix of all of the above. The soundtrack has an ominous yet ineffable darkness that lingers throughout the whole film. That's pretty awesome, man. Coming in at number 8, we got Videodrome from 1983. Howard Shore's soundtrack for Videodrome feels timeless. A beguiling mix of analog, orchestra, and synth. The opening track still sounds ahead of its time, utilizing percussive glitched out samples over discordant synthesizers reminiscent of One Point Nortrek. Next track, the score mimics, I don't know what that is. The score mimics the unsettling eroticism of David Kornberg's masterpiece, equal parts seductive and eerie. Beautiful, beautiful. Coming in at number 7, It Follows, 2014 film. The understated nature of most of It Follows horror requires a terrifying soundtrack to go with it. This is a disaster piece provided through rich synthesizer landscapes that swell into the distorted waves of terror throughout the whole film's runtime. What makes disaster piece soundtrack stand out, however, is how it also perfectly captures the coming of age through line that is important to It Follows as the film scares. Listen to Jay and you'll be transported into a melancholy, all while a distant horror hangs overhead. Coming in at number 6, old school movie from 1968 called Rosemary's Baby. There is perhaps no opening theme as unsettling as that of Rosemary's Baby. Mia Farrow's soft la-la-las over strings and an echoing plucked guitar sound nice, right? But wrong! It's terrifying. Go back and check that one out. Coming in at number 5 is an absolute classic, 1960s Psycho. Hitchcock's Psycho is one of the most important films of all time, a film which permanently changed what Hollywood thought a horror movie could and should be. The score is no small part to that as well. Just like the film itself, the score starts relatively unassuming, though twinges of darkness seep into lifting melodies. Of course, everything changes with the stabbing. The strings stab right along with the knife. It's a testament of the undeniable prowess that Psycho might not be the greatest score, but it surely is one of the most influential. Coming in at number 4 is one I'd never heard of before, so you guys might have to fill me in on this one. Suspiria from 1977. The Suspiria theme is one of the few horror soundtracks that, while scary, is also just a great rock song. Italian prog rock band Goblin scored this great film, and the band lives up to its name, creating a devilishly rock horror anthem that no joke has vocals chanting witch over rollicking guitar grooves. Goblin Suspiria's soundtrack shows that a horror score doesn't need to have aspermeric dread, but it can also jam. So, huh, is that a teaser? Might that one make my list this coming Friday? Make sure you guys tune in to find out. We're getting to the nitty-gritty here. Coming in at number three is going to be Halloween from 1978. It wasn't enough for John Carpenter to simply produce, direct, and co-write Halloween. He also had to score it. The game-changing slasher film was made on a shoestring budget, and so Carpenter, without the funds to hire a composer or orchestra, used a piano and synthesizer to score the entire movie. The result is a theme which is an instant classic, pulsing singular piano notes backed by a twitching click track, then underscored by throbbing synthetic brass. The simplicity of the Halloween soundtrack is its superpower, worming its way into your head and staying there. I like that. I like it a lot. Coming in at number two is a movie from 1980 called The Shining. Maybe you've heard of it. The Shining's opening scene is a study in the power of a score. Without sound, we're seeing a family drive through a beautiful mountainscape, perhaps for a fun vacation. It is all but certain the family is heading to the bowels of hell. At the forefront of the electronic music innovation and had already worked with Stanley Kubrick, The Shining sees her further refining warped synthetic soundscapes to great effect. Even though Kubrick only used two of her songs, the rest of the soundtrack is taken from classical pieces written by the likes of names that I cannot pronounce. The Shining provides a shining, wink wink, example of musical direction, not limiting itself to one composer. Great, great movie, and I do agree that that soundtrack and score is phenomenal. Coming in at number one, The Thing. By 1982, there was no question John Carpenter knew how to write a horror soundtrack. Even so, for The Thing, he tapped legendary composer Ennio Morricone to score what would be a crowning masterpiece. Carpenter, always a man of few words, gave the composer one guiding direction, fewer notes. Morricone then used a sublime combination of orchestra and synthesizer to create what can only be described as frozen fear. The soundtrack is droning, swelling, and dissipating, underscoring the paranoia of the endemic that is in the film. Wow, what a great way to wrap that up. But that is the top 10 horror scorey sounds from our friends over at Studio Binder. Go give them a check out, man. They have a lot of good things going on about soundtracks. They kind of helped me figure out what I wanted to do for this week, because I was like, it's October. We need to start getting into that spooky environment. Let's talk about some good songs. And I thought that would be a fun way to wrap things up for this week. So that is your top 10 horror movie scores. Let me know which ones are your favorite. Please throw them in the comments. Come on over to our Facebook, our Instagram, our YouTube. Tell us hello. Tell us what's up. Come hang out with us and share in the good times. But that is the show for this week. The Metal Groove Podcast is coming to a wrap. I had a lot of fun, you guys. Thanks for hanging out with me. And until next time, stay metal. That's the show for this week. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. Hey, be a friend, tell a friend. Please like and share this and join us over at the Thrill Me Podcast Network on Facebook and YouTube. Be sure to check out Haunter's Podcast, The Review at Rob Show, The Mr. Wonderful Show, and Zach's Speakeasy as well. This incredible lineup is brought to you by the Thrill Me Podcast Network. And hey, until next time, stay metal.